from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Watching the ships roll in, then I watch them roll away again.
Sausalito's houseboats range from the palatial to the questionably seaworthy, and the community counts among its members doctors and lawyers, as well as some of the original artists and bohemians who created the waterfront neighborhood. What's it like to live in a floating home? We'll talk to several longtime residents about the history of the community and discuss big changes currently underway to disperse and remove some of the more eclectic and ramshackle residences. And we'll try to get to the bottom of an ongoing mystery. Did Otis Redding really write the Dock of the Bay on a Sausalito houseboat?
Watching the tide.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this Forum Hour. From the wreckage of World War II ships, bohemians and hippies built a floating home community known for its eclectic houseboats and houseboat owners and a life on the water, which included an unwritten code of privacy and cooperation among the residents. After the so-called houseboat wars between residents and developers during the 60s and 70s, the neighborhood gradually lost its counterculture identity, and a process is now underway to remove or relocate boats from the eclectic Gates Co-op, a living time capsule from the original community. But life in Sausalito's floating neighborhoods is still far from conventional, and in this Forum Hour, we turn our attention to the history and ongoing unfolding saga of the world-famous houseboat neighborhood. Joining us here in studio, a number of people from that world. We want to welcome, first of all, Larry Clinton, who is a houseboat resident since 1982 and president of the Sausalito Historical Society. And good to have you here.
Good morning.
Welcome. Joe Tate is also with us, houseboat resident, leader during the houseboat wars, and lead singer and guitarist for the Redlegs, the waterfront's homegrown rock band. Welcome, Joe Tate.
Thank you.
Good to have you both here. Larry Clinton, let me begin with you, and let's go back to, the origins of the community such as we know it now, which really began after the Second World War. But you really have to go back to people, moving on the waterfront late 19th century after the earthquake. I mean, that's where people decided to sort of take up residence, huh?
Correct. The first floating homes were arks that people from San Francisco used as summer places, primarily in the Belvedere Lagoon, but also up in the Corte Madera Creek in the Larkspur area. And then when they lost their homes in the 1906 quake and fire, several families had moved aboard. And in order to have easier access, they began pulling the boats up on shore or attaching them to piers that they built closer to shore. So that was really the genesis of waterfront living in the Bay Area.
And Sausalito was an artist colony.
Yeah. After World War II, particularly, a lot of people came out studying on the GI Bill, and many of them were artists. Richard Diebenkorn was probably the best known of that generation. And people were taking derelict boats like the Lassen and turning them into art studios. Loyola and Ed Fortane were the leaders of that movement, and they attracted other artists who took space in the old ship to practice their arts.
What was the magnet for the more bohemian or hippie folks who became really identified with that counterculture?
Well, I suppose the primary magnet was inexpensive housing, because there were some the waterfront of Sausalito could be bought and sold in those days. Today, it's much more regulated than that. And so there were a few people who controlled large sections of the waterfront who were very open to letting people pull up a ferry or an old World War II landing craft or something and create a home out of it and lived rent-free.
It was kind of anarchic in those days, I mean, particularly in the 60s and 70s. It was almost a commune-like feeling and very community-oriented, people helping each other, relying upon each other, yeah?
Yeah, and in some ways that spirit still continues today.
Well, it's also being kind of moved in different directions, reconfigured as we speak now, isn't it?
That's true. In the 70s, the county decided that the community needed to be brought up to code. And so they permitted the building of 11 docks that were all hooked up to shore with all the utilities, sewage, electricity, later on TV cable even. And many people chose to move onto those docks, and some people chose not to. And the remnants of those groups are primarily in the Gates Co-op today.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about what's going on in the Gates Co-op community today. And, yeah, I want to bring Joe Tate into the conversation here. Talk about the houseboat wars. It was sort of the community against the local police and the city council and the Coast Guard, but it was really the developers, wasn't it?
It was really the developers. The developers moved in, and just as the Vietnam War ended, the repression started here. And so, you know, we knew that they were going to buy the property from Don Arquez. And as soon as that was done, well, they started eviction proceedings. You know, they offered us all a chance, you know, to sign on to their – sign a lease with them and stay. But that would have been required, you know, people to bring their houseboats up to code. And the folks that are now in the Gates Co-op, most of them wouldn't have had the money to buy in. And so they opted to stay out, and they fought the whole thing in court. You know, and we kind of joined forces. It wasn't just there at the houseboats. It was also the development at Marin City, which is across the highway from us. And the same developer developed that area too. And, of course, there was opposition there, and the opposition was joined by the houseboaters. And there was actually a Tidelands Trust lawsuit filed by a couple of individuals there. It was Rocky Graham from Marin City and Larry White from the houseboats. And apparently, well, just before the trial was to start, Rocky Graham was murdered. And then actually by on the Marin City board, he ran for the board and won. And the guy that lost, and he was pro-development, he was going to shoehorn the whole thing in. For Marin City, his son went and killed Rocky Graham. So there's plenty of people that think there was a connection there. But and Larry White went into hiding, and he's been in New York ever since.
Now let me go back with you to the early days, though. What drew you to the houseboat community?
Well, I was in a rock and roll band, and I came to Waldo Point. I came there first in 1964, and just looked at it and said, "Wow, you know." And then I wound up living in San Francisco with this band, and we weren't doing much. And so I came back over to Sausalito about 1967 and found a houseboat to rent from Bob Kerrig, and he's the father of my future bass player. Anyway, I soon figured out that I could. Get some ramshackle house. You know, it was I found something that was like I was floating on styrofoam. It was just a construction box for nothing, or maybe I paid $50 for it.
Plus, there's a lot of stuff out there that you could just add on. I mean,
that's exactly what happened. And I moved. This thing was anchored offshore, and I did for the first time in my life. I was living without paying rent. And I kind of like that.
There's a film, actually. It was made about Joe Tate, who was known as King of the Waterfront. He starred in a feature film back in 1975 called The Last Free Ride by Joe Nolan and Sal Nolan, which dramatizes those early days of the Sausalito community and the so-called houseboat wars. In fact, I was talking about a clip where somebody says he's having problems with his motor, and Joe says, "I can fix it right away for you. You'll never have a problem again. Give me $5. Guy gives him $5. Joe takes out the motor, throws it in the water, and says, "You'll never have problems again." Well, in this clip, which we want to hear, which is from the film. Narrator Sal Ruda, describes how the first houseboats came to be and introduces the man you're hearing here, the protagonist of the film, Joe Tate.
When somebody'd get a new boat, we'd all pitch in and help turn it into a home. We built our houseboats from whatever we could scrounge that would float. Navy surplus, chunks of styrofoam, and plywood. Anyone looking for an easy life didn't find it here. We paid for our independence with hard work. It's no secret that boats have a tendency to leak and have been known to sink. You see, for us, voluntary poverty was not just some kind of fashion statement. We were proud to be poor, self-reliant, and free of the system. Oh, the good times we had back then. How well I remember them.
This is too much! I love it!
Joe Tate and I went sailing a lot on his Chinese junk, the Wang Ho. I remember when he found it. What a mess. The hull was sunk and full of holes. Joe hauled it from the mud and had it shipshape in no time. Well, good enough so he and Pam and their kid Sammy could live on it without fear of drowning.
Well, you can get more information on that film at thelastfreeride.com, and we're going to bring Sarah McFadden into this discussion, who has lived on a houseboat for 14 years, and I won't say is an old friend because... Well, at our age, we don't talk about being old friends, but we've known each other for many, many years. Hi, Syra.
Hello, Michael.
Well, let's talk about what drew you to this community. And what I mean, you were living in Mill Valley and, in fact, wrote a famous book called The Serial, which was made into a movie, a bestseller book, and then moved in a San Francisco Victorian. And now you're there. Why are you there?
I was living in the city for 11 years. I loved my little Victorian house. And the city brought in the new breed of streetcars on Church Street, which was where I lived, and they rattled my little house on its foundation. The noise was just really hard to take. And since I work at home, it just became a big problem for me. Double glazing didn't handle it. Nothing did. Most reluctantly, I decided to give up my little house and look for a quieter place to live. And I found the houseboats more or less by accident. I had good friends who had lived out here forever. And over the second bottle of wine at dinner one night, somebody said, "Why don't you move out here?" And I said, "What a good idea." And within about a week, I think, I found a house. I thought of it as a temporary jumping off place. Well, I figured out what to do next, and I am still here. And I expect to be here forever and have a Viking funeral when I die.
You want to talk about that and give us a picture of what a Viking funeral might look like?
Well, I asked the harbor's permission to set my boat aflame with me in it and push it out into the middle of the lagoon when the time comes. But they're very prissy about such things. They're citing environmental regulations and that sort of thing.
There is a whole different culture there, isn't there? I mean, you wrote about the culture of Marin County in the serial, and there's a kind of culture within the culture in the Sausalito houseboat community.
This is a really singular place. I always describe it as Brigadoon. It sort of looms up out of the fog and sinks away again sometimes. It doesn't feel like living in Sausalito proper, certainly not like living in Mill Valley, where this really singular little island in between. And it's very diverse. There are people out here with sumptuous houseboats and lots of money, and there are people, as Larry Clinton and Joe Tate pointed out, living on everything from World War II landing crafts to really, really funky, wonderful homemade creations that look as if you could blow them over, and they're very sturdy, and they've been here forever. Thank you. And I simply love the diversity of it, both visually and in terms of the residents.
Talking with Sarah McFadden, who's a houseboat resident, writer and editor, far cry from Montana and the world of rodeos, I imagine, too. Those of you who know Sarah's work.
Very few cowboys out here.
But the language even is different in the houseboat community, so I hear. Is that true?
I don't know about that. I know that I never realized until I moved out here how many water metaphors there are. And how often you use them without meaning to. So I meet somebody on the dock who says, "How are you doing?" And I say, "Staying afloat." There's just sort of an endless list. I don't think we have a private language as such, but we all end up inadvertently talking like old salts after a few years.
And you also learn skills that most of us landlubbers or those of us who live on the land would never imagine, like getting a seagull out of a bedroom, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that was one of my early adventures. I moved in the middle of El Nino in 1997, which was not my smartest move ever. I had made the move impetuously, as I told you, and I moved out here in ferocious storms. My landing ramp fell into the bay, so that I was isolated from the pier. I spent the first day sort of pressing my nose plaintively up against the glass in my window, hoping somebody would come by and I could point out that I had a problem. I had piles of book boxes slamming down. The boat was rocking like mad, and there was a series of crashes. And I had also managed to leave a window open. The rain was coming in, and I had a refugee seagull taking shelter from the storm in my bedroom. And I thought, this is, without exception, the worst move I have ever made. And believe me, there's a lot of competition. But I captured the bird. I threw a bath towel over him or her.
Never determined the gender.
No, I didn't turn it upside down and look. Those beaks are ferocious. It's very interesting. I learned that seagulls weigh absolutely nothing. They look rather substantial, but they're just thistle down. I threw a bath towel over it. I took it to the window and threw it out, and it gave me a sort of snarky look and flew off. And I thought, this is going to take a lot of adjustment. And it has, and I've loved every bit of it. It's really fun to live out here.
Talking with Syra McFadden, let me open the phone lines. I know there are many of you who, well, first I put the question out to listeners, have you ever been in a houseboat or spent time on one? I used to go every July 4th to my friend Gene Schoenfeld, otherwise known as Dr. Hip, and watch the fireworks. But those of you who have some thoughts about having spent time on a houseboat or have familiarity with the very distinctive and singular community of houseboat dwellers in Sausalito may want to join us, and we'll talk about some of the changes that are going on there. You may even want to address those in the course of the conversation in this hour. Let me give you the phone number. You can join us right now at our toll-free number. We do welcome your phone calls. 866-733-6786 is the number for you to call, and indeed, you can call us now. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or go to our Facebook page. So let me go back to Larry Clinton, our resident historian. Did Otis Redding actually write Dock of the Bay on a houseboat?
There's no dispute that he certainly got the inspiration for the song there. He started it there, and then he finished it back in Memphis with a writing partner. And then he recorded it, and before the record was released, he died in that plane crash, and so the record became a posthumous hit for him.
Now, there's a lot of celebrities who have lived in the world of the houseboat community in the early days. We had Alan Watts and Shel Silverstein, I know. There was also Rip Torn. But even Sterling Hayden and Geraldine Page go back to residency in that world. And the world also has a lot to do. You were talking about ARCs earlier on with the Van Damme. That's kind of a ferry boat that was turned into a community center. Let's talk about that.
Well, Joe was more familiar with that than I was. I moved there just about in time to see the Van Damme get bulldozed, which was a sad moment because it was such a precursor of the whole lifestyle down there.
So, Joe, tell us about the Van Damme.
Okay. Well, my first experiences on the Van Damme were playing with a band called Salvation. We'd come over there, and a guy named Marty Martinez operated it as the Ark. And to the resentment of the owner, Don Arquez, he didn't like it being called that. He wanted it to be called the Charles Van Damme. Eventually,
His name comes from where, Charles Van Damme?
The Charles Van Damme was there was a person that lived in the 19th century in Vallejo, and that the boat was named after. Anyway, our next experiences with it, after the Ark business closed, was we started giving, when the houseboat wars started up, we started giving benefit dances there to for the Legal Defense Fund.
Like $2 a head?
It was $2 a head and free beer. And believe me, we made plenty of money doing that because the beer was like $14 a keg. You know, and so it was, we got around the ABC laws and stuff by just giving the beer away. We didn't sell any beer, but we gave a lot of it away. And there may have been underage drinkers even. But when we started that program up, Don Arquez, the owner of the property, we asked him about it, and he actually gave us – he says, yeah, you can do that. And he let us use the place for free for probably 5 years. And during that time, we had many, many big parties there.
And many people who, again, are quite well known. I mean, let me go back to Larry Clinton on this. I noticed that well, a friend of ours of the program, Stuart Brand, of course, lived there. But I guess Anne Lamott lived there, and Bill Cosby.
A lot of Hollywood stars came through and stayed for a brief time. I think Chevy Chase, when he made the movie Foul Play, stayed on a floating home. And speaking of Sterling Hayden and Shel Silverstein, their boats still remain in the community. Shell's was built on an old balloon barge, which was an air defense installation that sort of they floated these balloons outside the Golden Gate Bridge. So it'd be a sort of an airborne submarine net to keep the low-flying bombers from doing their thing. And so a few of those boats still exist, and that's on Liberty Dock. Sterling Hayden's old boat is on Issaquah Dock.
And we should mention the late Phil Frank, who many people really adored, a great cartoonist, also lived in the houseboat community. What's going on now? I mean, see if you can just sketch for us, Larry. You got affordable housing quota now with the houseboats. You got a reconfiguration of the houseboats. Waldo Point has moved in. Where is this all going?
Well, Waldo Point, there are actually five different – we distinguish our community as floating homes, which actually have a legal definition under the California Health and Safety Code, as non-navigable vessels permanently moored in residential marinas and hooked up to shore with all utilities. In fact, the only navigable vessel in the community belongs to Stewart Brand on South 40. And he takes it out once a year, as I understand it, just because he can.
It was out a couple days ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, more often than
I
that.
I saw it from the cruising club last night.
Okay.
Stewart Brand, of course, the founder of the Whole Earth Catalog.
Yeah, right, so. And has been in the community for decades now. It was a development that where people, as I said, people chose to move onto the docks into something more of a regulated lifestyle, and others didn't. Some of them are in the Gates Co-op, and there's still about 30 anchor outs that just ride hook in the middle of the bay. So there are disparate communities throughout the whole Sausalito waterfront.
And how do you feel about this, Syra McFadden?
About the reconfiguration?
Yeah.
I think it'll probably be good for the community. There's going to be a new waterfront park, I understand. I think that's great, and more access to the community. We're being, on my dock, we're being really mobbed by tourists already this summer, and it's such a pleasure to have people out here looking at this place with new eyes, and they always tell us how wonderful it is and how fortunate we are to live here. The co-op certainly can stand some aesthetic improvement, but it's a great place. It's a lively community that's fought for the right to exist and that is certainly integrated into the docks where here comes one of those water metaphors. We're all in the same boat. There was a reconfiguration plan presented by the harbor when I first moved out here, and no one liked it. And everyone on the existing docks and the co-op got together and worked together to come up with a better plan, which is essentially the one that's going to go ahead. It's going to be noisy and grubby construction and parking problems and that sort of thing for a while. And then I think we'll have really... really a much nicer place to live.
I'm glad to hear about it. I'm delighted to hear about your optimism about this. We're coming up on a break here. I just wanted to have Joe Tate weigh in because I imagine you're concerned about gentrification here or homogenization, yeah?
Well, it's already kind of gentrified, you know, and I think one of the big bones of contention with the new park is they're going to put it right where the Gates Co-op is now and disperse that community into the other parts of Waldo Point Harbor, which is going to separate everybody from each other. And the other thing is they want to destroy the remnants of the Charles Van Damme. There's still the paddle wheel and the stack there. And that's one of the bones of contention. And I think it's probably going to go in our favor because Ted Rose is going to say, well, okay, you know, but I'm just going to bulldoze your house, but we'll keep this, you know.
Well, we're going to hear from somebody when we return from the Harbor Equity Group, but we'll also hear from you, our listeners. Feel free to join us. Toll-free number 866-733-6786. We continue to talk about the very unique houseboat community in Sausalito and what's happening to it and its history. And have you, in fact, been on a houseboat? And if so, maybe you want to give some recollections of being in that community or being on that houseboat. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or join us on our Facebook page. We're with Larry Clinton, Joe Tate, and Syra McFadden. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum on KQED Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. Sausalito's houseboats range from the palatial to the questionable seaworthy, and the community counts among its members doctors and lawyers, as well as some of the original artists and bohemians who created the waterfront neighborhood. What's it like to live in a floating home? We're talking to several longtime residents about the history of the community and talking about the big changes that are currently underway to disperse and remove some of the more eclectic and ramshackle residences. Larry Clinton with us in studio has been a houseboat resident since 1982 and is president of the Sausalito Historical Society, Joe Tate, houseboat resident, leader during the houseboat wars, and lead singer guitarist for the Redlegs, also the waterfront's homegrown rock band, and Syra McFadden with us by phone, houseboat resident, writer, and editor. Also want to mention that on September 22nd, Larry Clinton informs me on my birthday, there will be an open home tour in the houseboats from 11 to 4. Actually, see the insides of 15 of the floating homes, and the public is invited, Larry? Is that right?
Yes, and there's information on our website, which is www.floatinghomes.org.
And a listener named Beth says, remove some of the more eclectic and ramshackle residences. These are what give the area character. Get rid of them, and you simply have the 1% mentality, making Marin County look even more snobby and elitist. And on that critical note, I thought we'd bring Stan Barbarich into this conversation. Stan Barbarich, excuse me, is president of the Harbor Equity Group, a Waldo Point Harbor resident organization, and past president of the Floating Homes Association. He's been a houseboat resident for 27 years. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Michael.
Good to have you. Well, what about that concern of Beth and others that we're going to just have more homogenization, more of a kind of 1% look to the houseboats?
Oh, well, you know, let me address that by first correcting a couple of misconceptions that I've heard voiced this morning. Number one, that houseboats will be bulldozed. No houseboats are going to be bulldozed in the Gates Co-op. Rather, the existing homes will maintain their general style and type of construction, but they will be brought up to code. That's certainly not bulldozing. As regards homogeneity, none of the homes are going to be caused to change the style or appearance of their home in the process of being brought up to code. They're just going to be brought up to code. And if that's what you want to define as homogeneity, then I think then that's probably a really good thing.
Not going
to
see little boxes, in other words.
No, sir, that's absolutely correct. The plan is to rehabilitate every single home that can be rehabilitated. And according to the Gates Co-op architect and Ecumenical Housing, who is managing the project, there isn't a plan at this point for bulldozing houseboats.
And the five docs were all in unanimous agreement to this?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, as Syra mentioned, there was a great deal of controversy over the plans that Waldo Point brought forward for trying to accommodate the Gates Cooperative Homes, which was hugely opposed by BCDC. They're the ones who wanted them all bulldozed. But the community rose up and spent a great deal of time working together to make a plan where while there will be a park in a portion of the area that they currently occupy, there will actually be a new dock that will accommodate the majority of the homes that are there now. And on each of the existing Waldo Point 5 docks, an additional 4 up-to-code Gates Co-op homes will be sited on each one of those docks, which is going to create a great deal of disruption for the people who currently live on those docks, but they're willing to do it because the end result is a permanent, affordable housing community within Southern Marin, which is a pretty rare thing in Southern Marin.
And there's going to be excavation of the parking lot, as we heard, but you're also raising a parking area and building pilings, no?
Well, that's right. The seawall has to be rehabilitated. It's kind of sliding into the bay, but once that's done, then the parking lots will be raised so that when we have high tides, our cars aren't going to be ruined, and we won't be able to any longer conduct kayak races in the parking lots.
So reconfiguration is ultimately a good deal, a win-win, as you're presenting it here?
We can't determine that anybody is losing at all, including the proponents of preserving the remaining portions of the Van Dam. The harbor has a plan that it's worked with the folks that have been trying to preserve that and assure us that it will have a place to remain.
Stan Barbarich, president of the Harbor Equity Group, and they're also a Waldo Point Harbor resident organization, and he is past president of the Floating Homes Association and a resident of the houseboats for 27 years. Well, I put out the call to you, our listeners, to join us and let us know what your experiences have been on houseboats or what you think with respect to some of the changes that are going on in this houseboat community in Sausalito. Let me go first to Vallejo and welcome you, Susanna. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just had some fun memories growing up there as a kid. My mom and I lived there for about 12 years. And something I remember about the community that was really fun was all the nicknames that a lot of people had. For instance, my nickname was Subi. like Subi Honey.
Joe Tate, what, like, you remember that young woman.
Subi.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Joe. How's
Hi.
It going?
Hi, Subi.
We had, like, Captain Dredge, Peacock, Garbage, Joey Crunch, and another really fun thing. Joe, remember this TV Liberation Day?
I remember TV Liberation Day, yeah. We used to, every February the 20th, we'd get together, we'd turn on a bunch of TV sets and smash them while we played rock and roll music.
Yeah.
And we had this one big, like a derrick, and we had a long extension cord, and we had a TV up there with a long extension cord, and we had it tuned to like The Edge of Night, or As the Stomach Turns. And with the opening ceremony, we played the Star Spangled Banner and threw this thing off the top of the thing, and it's, while it's still playing, right, it comes down and hits the deck and just smashes into a million pieces.
Big pile of TVs, too.
Yeah.
And so, Larry Clinton, everybody had a nickname? Or still does have nicknames?
Now the houses have nicknames.
Yeah.
We have one called Alien Life Form Research Institute and several, and with a wild paint job to match, too.
Yeah. Mine was the Spice Box.
What was it like growing up there, Susanna?
It was really fun. I remember just running down these little skinny pieces of, you know, like planks that we called docks. And there, it was just all, you know, kind of put together. And I just remember running down these, you know, really bouncy, skinny little pieces of wood and just going, wow, how did I not fall in, you know? And we had like a community shower that everybody could use. And
well, actually, was that in the days when there's a lot of nudity?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I remember the parties were really wild. They always stick out in my mind. And then there was a theater group down there. What was that group called, Joe?
Antenna Theater?
Yeah, Antenna Theater.
Well, it's still there.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're still around.
Well,
cool.
But in the early days, it was called Beggar's Theater.
Oh, okay.
Beggar's Theater, and then they changed their name to Antenna about 1975.
Yeah.
Well, Susanna, good to hear from you and hear the memories you have, which obviously glow in your consciousness, and I appreciate you joining us.
Frank wrote a neat little children's book, if anybody wants to check it out. It's called Subi Lives on a Houseboat. You can get it on Amazon.
Right.
And it's got some great pictures and some, you know, real-life stories of what it was like to grow up there as a kid.
And you're the star of it, Subi on the Houseboat. Actually, he has a whole history of the houseboats. Frank did. Thank you, Subi, for joining us. Good to hear from you this morning. Let's hear from another caller, and that's Peter joining us. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I actually live on a floating home in Point San Pablo Yacht Harbor, which is in Richmond. And I just wanted to mention that there are floating home communities in other parts of the Bay. There's about 12 floating homes in Berkeley, the Berkeley Marina. There's some in Alameda. There's even some behind McCovey Cove over there and hidden away in San Francisco. And down in Redwood City, there are some.
Yeah, and in fact, we did a show on Buckminster Fuller. There was a big exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art, and he was talking about, you know, the idea of building floating homes, really huge communities designed by his architectural genius that never really came to pass. But I imagine he had some impact on this community, didn't he, Larry Clinton?
Well, we do have some. There was a geodesic dome out there for a while.
Oh, yeah, he came. His niece lived with us down at Dredgetown, and Dredgetown was like a little offshoot of the whole thing. There was an old sunken dredge down by the Sausalito Cruising Club near Dunphy Park. And that's where I actually built my sailboat there. And we were there for about 7 or 8 years, anchored offshore, and we're causing a lot of trouble for the city of Sausalito.
Wait a minute, didn't you do a trade on your boat, though, and go off on a bigger boat?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, tell us about that. I mean, it's kind of a fascinating story. Guy comes aboard your boat, and you just offered yours as a trade for his?
Well, as you'll recall, Saul Ruta was talking about the Hoang Ho.
Yeah.
And this is this boat that I salvaged up the river 1 year and rebuilt it. And it was a small boat, 26 feet, and I managed to parley it into a 70-foot boat with just a little finagling.
Dealing, wheeling.
Wheeling and dealing. And so I got this 70-foot hull, and we put some telephone poles in it for mass. And I got some Chinese sails from Hong Kong for fairly cheap. And, you know, we sailed it all around the Pacific for a few years.
Off you went, yeah.
That was the last free ride, or as I like to call it, the last cheap ride.
Now, is that the boat that's still out, anchored out there?
It is, yeah.
I'd just like to mention that 3 years ago, my wife bid on a ride on that boat for a luncheon cruise, And so I enjoyed a birthday lunch on that boat some 40 years after the fact.
Okay.
Here's an email from a listener who says, let me go to you, Syra McFadden. This is Anna, who says, I'm fortunate enough to be one of Syra McFadden's neighbors. She is a treasure and a pleasure. What is fascinating to me is how much of a family-oriented community our dock has become. My husband and I have twin six-year-old boys and two cats in our small home, and there are 10 kids on our dock. They run up and down the dock, ride bikes, go in and out of each other's homes. They're parented and watched over by all dock residents and are enjoying the good life of growing up on a cul-de-sac with no cars. We have four families of four on our little dock and are extremely lucky to live there.
Oh, what a nice message from Anna, whose five-year-old twins are just one of the joys of living here. I don't know quite how it happened, but my dock has, as Anna said, a lot of little kids, and they are just a joy to have around. It's so nice. At this point in my golden years, it's very, very nice to have the diversity of young people around. They're noisy. They clutter up the dock. They irritate a couple of our neighbors no end because they'd like more peace and quiet. And again, it's one of the joys. It's just such fun to have the puppies running around.
But I'm struck by the fact that, you know, a lot of people say, I don't necessarily feel my kids are that safe running around the neighborhoods or going out at all times. When in the old days, people used to look after kids and there would be a kind of almost communal feeling of parenting. But that's what I'm hearing from.
Oh, I think children are very safe out here. We're all going up and down the dock all the time. Obviously, everything you do, you have to schlep back and forth from the parking lot. So the kids are sort of under everybody's watchful eyes all the time, and I do think they're in a particularly safe and sheltered and wonderful place to be little kids.
And Larry Clinton, you were going to add something?
Yeah, just to build on Cyrus' point, this goes even further than parenting or child care. People who come to the docks for any length of time are astonished at how close-knit the community is. Primarily, it's because you see each other coming and going off the dock. You can't avoid your neighbors. Also, there are, you know, certain shared concerns: fire on closely spaced boats on wooden piers, and sinking, which sometimes occurs. And so, you develop this incredible community feel, and you know your neighbors much better than people living on land nearby. I have friends at Strawberry, which is part of Mill Valley, right nearby, who don't know their neighbors anywhere near as well as we do.
I wanted to add on that, too. You know, we've been talking about how the Gates Co-op people are going to be dispersed into the new community. And right now, they are a very close-knit group. And so now they're going to be dispersed. And so I think they have a lot of trepidation about that. And I know how they feel because I used to live at the Gates Co-op myself. And I had the fortunate occurrence back in the 90s to get a really good job where I was making some money. And I bought the Becky Thatcher in 1999, and so I moved on to the new docks, and I felt the same thing. Well, I don't know anybody over here, right? And I'm leaving my old community, but you know, eventually, I sort of blended into the new scenery, as you might say.
And Syra, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the sense of community out here. When I moved out here, I now have a partner who's also a longtime houseboat guy. But when I moved out here, I was one of several lone women on the dock. And I learned that all of my neighbors would be helpful. As I said, I had an immediate crisis when I moved in here. No entrance ramp, which is a problem. Everybody pitches in to help if you have a problem. Everybody is sort of aware of each other's circumstances. If somebody's traveling, we keep an eye on the house, for example. But there is also room for lots of privacy. What I do working at home as a writer is a solitary occupation. And one thing I love about it is I can just hole up here and work uninterrupted as long as I like, and then pop my head back out into the community. It's just a great mix. And I think I may have told you, Michael, at some point that when I first moved out here, I had some local celebrity, some of it not too friendly, And my neighbors were quite wonderful. Anybody came looking for me, they would tell whoever didn't know where I lived.
Does this mean you're still getting flack from the cereal after all these years?
It will never die. It will never die. I now say when people say, "Are you the woman who wrote that awful book?" I say, "Certainly not. I don't know what you're talking about." But they were just wonderful. They just looked after me. I never asked anybody to do this, but they just send anybody off on a total wild goose chase, which was wonderful for me until I had dinner guests and they wandered the docks for an hour before they found me.
Well, but if anybody says to you, are you the woman who wrote that awful book? You say, "I've never written an awful book."
Thank you. That's a much better answer. I'm appropriating that one.
Larry Clinton, Big Steve writes, "I ride my bike along the houseboats every Saturday. We love to go every year on the open house tour, which you mentioned is September 22nd, which was a fundraiser. It was fascinating to see 10 to 12 different houseboats of all sizes and varieties, including Phil Frank's. Do they still do open house?" And the answer is yes, as we mentioned earlier. But he goes on to say it was very fun, strange phrasing, and great opportunity for the houseboat community to open up. I got the idea of the romantic notion of living often confronted with the reality of daily life, TV, toilets, etc." That's from Big Steve. And just some Facebook remarks from listeners. "We asked you for stories about life on a houseboat. Here's Debbie's. Our friends lived on a houseboat in Sausalito before they had kids. It was cozy, one room plus bath. Our favorite story is the husband telling us, 'Do you know what you do when you have a fight on a houseboat? You go in the head and slam the door and stay there.'" Here's a listener named Shecky who says, "I lived in a Marin Yacht Harbor for the past 5 to 6 years, and I loved the whole boat life when I first moved in. There was a sense of community and serenity. But over the last 2 or 3 years, all of the harbors have turned to a refuge for people who are down and out of their luck. It's become unsafe and almost criminal. I moved away. I miss it terribly." And a listener also writes on Facebook, or on a webpage, "We've lost so much character of the Bay already. I hope y'all prevail." Well, let me go to another caller here, and that's Mike in Oakland. Mike, you were in the last free ride?
I was, Mike. I was actually in with Joe Tate, and the film by, well, Saul Rhoda and Roy Nolan actually made the film, but I played the heavy. Joe may remember that. I was the evil supervisor who wanted to redevelop the waterfront,
okay,
and get rid of all those terrible houseboats. But I also lived on a houseboat. I lived on...
Did that launch a stellar career? What did, I mean?
Well, I was working for Bart at the time still. But I lived on an old ferry, on an old tugboat on Gate 5, and I bought it in 1964. And I remember the day I bought the houseboat, there was a huge headline, banner headline in the Independent Journal, "Houseboats to Go." So, you know, we started right off with some trepidation, but actually I had a great time living on that dock for about 5 years.
Well, I thank you for calling, and we're getting nostalgic here. You know, one of the I told both Larry and Joe before we went on the air, one of the first interviews I did when I was at a station called KTIM in Marin County was with Sally Stanford, who, of course, was the mayor of Sausalito, and it's all accounted for in a book I wrote called Off Mike. Not a necessarily entirely pleasant experience, that interview with Sally Stanford. I'll say no more. But let me get it. A number of people are saying that living in that community was not necessarily all that pleasant or idyllic. Sharon, you've got some mixed responses to your memories. Please join us.
Well, yes, I love the houseboats, and this is making me really want to get back there. But I lived on a teeny tiny houseboat that leaked in the winter for about 6 years, but I came home on September 1st from a trip, and there was somebody ransacking my home. Nobody locked their doors. I didn't even have a lock that worked. But I think I would leave for months at a time, and everything would be fine. People would look after my place, and this was just an aberration. Somebody thought it was a good idea to go on a dead-end street, take a house, and start trying to rob it.
So what do we know about the crime rates in that area? We're talking about how safe and protected it is. Does it differ from other areas of Marin County? Do we know, Larry Clinton?
We hear very little about thefts on the docks because there's no escape route. I mean, people see you coming down the dock back to shore. Our parking lots are unsecured and uncovered, and we do have vandalism in the parking lots from time to time. It usually comes in waves, and sometimes they catch the people and sometimes they don't, but the wave stops for a while.
Let me thank you for the call, Sharon. Good to hear from you. We'll hear from another listener, and that's Margaret. Welcome.
Sorry. There.
Yeah, go ahead, Margaret.
I had to clear my throat. I lived in Marin City, actually, for 2 years in the late 60s and know lots of people and have a number of stories about the houseboats. But why I'm calling in is a couple of things, mainly that the filmmaker, first off, the painter, Jean Varda, lived on the houseboats. I couldn't give you his dates there, but he was right in the middle of every very interesting time. And there's in the film, in the autobiographical film of Agnes Varda, who was his niece, she has footage, it's grainy, but there it is, of her she came to California and met him. And it's really delightful to see. It's a great artifact. You can see it in her film, The Beaches of Agnes, or I think I found it on YouTube once. So that's just a bit of history and delight that I wanted to mention. Secondly, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that Juanita had her galley, her restaurant on the Charleston.
Well, there's a name I haven't heard in ages.
Juanita Musson.
Juanita had the famous restaurant, of course, many longtime old-timers will remember. And she did start in Sausalito, didn't she?
Yeah, I think she had a small sandwich shop down in the downtown waterfront before she moved on. And the Juanita's galley was on the Van Den. Now, was that before your time there or after?
That was even before it became the Ark. That was before Marty Martinez. She opened the first business there after it was landlocked. They brought it there in the early 60s.
Now, let me thank the caller and go to some of your emails here. Karen writes, I'm listening to your radio show and made me recall my dear friend Piero Caro, who lived on the San Rafael houseboat. He had a wonderful living space on the main deck, allowed others to live in the small areas above the deck and others to walk across the ferry to get onto their boats. He was a guru of the area, a wise and wonderful man. I visited him on weekends while I was going to San Francisco State, where he taught a class at the Experimental College, and it was a wonderful time and a wonderful community. And Alfred says, well, enjoying the segment, but I hope somebody mentions the story of Otis Redding. He seems to say this is like fact. Sitting on a houseboat, Bill Graham had arranged while Redding was doing a show in the city, the result on the dock of the bay. This remains sort of mysterious as to what the real story is, as we've said, but apparently it was inspired by Otis Redding's visit here. Alfred writes, having worked on the Sausalito waterfront for 30 years, the newer, nicer houseboat community came to mind when I read a description of a trendy hotel in Iceland. Quote, it's the sort of place where bankers stay because it looks like the sort of place where artists stay. And another listener who calls himself Uncle Fishbits writes on our website, wonderful story from a local woman. I live in Tiburon, and there's a lovely lady named Jeannie who ran Jeannie's Java for years. I believe she's about 76 now and was forced to close the shop. But I thought I'd relate the sentiment, the way that houseboat community had impact and affected people's outlook. I was getting an iced coffee, and she ambled back to grab a cup of ice. By then, we started talking about Tiburon open space and loving art of the local area. She had a pitcher of iced coffee in one hand, the cup of ice in another. She slumped back against the wall and exhaled loudly, you know, I knew this artist when I first moved here. He lived on a houseboat, and I was never the same. The colors, the designs, it was a different world. Mary writes on the web, my daughter, son-in-law, and grandbaby live in the co-op of Galilee, which is some houseboats but many active boats that can be taken and actually sailed. My son-in-law is a wooden boat builder and has a shop on the waterfront, living very convenient for his work, and it's an affordable way for them to live. Their harbor really is a community. Another listener says, wow, I had no idea that the Gates community was going to be broken up. I hope that doesn't happen. I think it shouldn't be, but the Sausalito houseboat community is one of the most special places I have ever encountered in perhaps the world. Phyllis writes, hi, Joe. Besides Shell and Stuart B., the beautiful and dedicated Jane Kane and radio personality Travis T. Hip, whom I worked with, by the way, okay, come to mind around the mystique of the Gates Co-op that you spoke of during your reign as king.
Michael, I'd just like to reinforce something that Stan said earlier about the co-op. All but a handful of those boats are going together on one new dock. So they aren't going to be quite as dispersed as we may have given that impression earlier. I think Stan said only four are actually going onto existing docks, and there will be a new dock right in the center of Waldo Point Harbor where all the remaining co-op boats will be placed.
Also want to mention, give a plug here for Jeff Greenwald's excellent article in the Smithsonian Magazine, which you can find a link on our website. The story is about the Sausalito houseboats, and I believe he talked to both of you at length, and it's a good, really good piece. Let me go to more of your calls. Caller from Sausalito, Janine, good morning.
Good morning. What a treasure. Thank you for this. And I just want to represent the new generation of people who are finally finding their way to the houseboat community. I'm in my 60s, and I've been in Marin County since 71. But I thought I was on my way out of Marin County because I felt like it was soulless. I lived in Ross and Belvedere and Larkspur and just couldn't connect any longer. And I was very lonely, felt like we were driving around one person, one car. And I thought this is my last hurrah, and found myself on the houseboats and never looked back.
Good story to kind of move into what we were going to end with here in this program. I want to thank Larry Clinton, Syra McFadden, Stan Barbarich, and Joe Tate, who's going to sing for us as we go out here. And I ought to mention that Joe Tate, for many years, as we said earlier, he's a guitarist. Now you can actually hear him at the No Name and a part of Red Legs, tuning his guitar.
We have a band called the Gators now.
Oh, that's right. I want to mention they're called the Gators. Tell us about what you're going to play, Joe.
And this is a song called Troubled Times, and it relates to the development moving in and how they tore everything down and built it up and raised the rent four times again. And so if I could just tune up a little bit here. I think we're okay.
Okay, go.
When you're ready.
Ready.
One more time, I seen it coming. Troubled time, 'cause they're here again. Got no money to pay my bills with. Always show does look like troubled time again. The landlord says he's down in hard time. Only makes 10 grand a month. Says he's got to wreck this tired old building. Build it up and raise their rent full time again. Well, I went to City Hall. It didn't take no time at all, 'cause they threw me right out on my ear. Though I told them that I must find a reason that is just why you got to wreck my happy home. Well, it wasn't too long before the cops were standing at their door. Come along, you better come along.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.